Otaku no Podcast, episode 35 for Monday, May 21st, 2012. The Japan Travel Extravaganza, part 3. This episode is brought to you by GoToMeeting, now with HD faces. Well, hey everyone, we are back for yet another installment of the Japan Travel Extravaganza. This is part 3 of the series, so if you haven't heard parts 1 and 2, be sure and go back into your iTunes or go to otakunopodcast.com and listen to them there. This will probably be the last episode in the Japan Travel series for a while, though, because things are starting to heat up in terms of conventions. We're going to FanimeCon this weekend, and the next podcast episode will probably be a FanimeCon wrap-up, which I hope to come out sometime in early June. And then, of course, we've got Anime Expo after that, and so there's definitely more to say about travel in Japan. I've got some more things I want to do on that note. So this series will definitely make its return, probably sometime later this summer. Speaking about later this summer and travel in Japan, I announced in our last episode that Pop Japan Travel has announced its grand return with their All Japan Alpha and Omega Tour Package. Some more details of that package have come out, including their price. Well, let's start with the bad news first, the price. They announced that the price of this fine package is $2,490, which may sound like a lot, but when you look at what you get in this tour, it's really quite reasonable. You get, of course, airfare to Japan, 6 days and five nights in Tokyo, 1 day and night in Kyoto, 3 days, two nights in Osaka, all with fully guided tours, full hotel accommodations, transportation to and from tour activities, admission and a booth at the Komishiya Dojinshi Market, the independent comics festival that I spoke of, admission to the Ghibli Museum and the Osamu Tezuka Manga Museum, seats for a Takarazuka review show, that's the famous all-female theater troupe, a special two-hour calligraphy experience with Japanese tea and sweets in Kyoto's Gion district, a traditional farewell banquet on the banks of the Kamo River in Kyoto, a private bus tour of Kyoto, admission to Kinkakuji Temple, otherwise known as the Golden Pavilion, Nijo Castle, Sanju Sanajendo Hall, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, I apologize, Kiyomizu Temple, which I believe is the Kiyomizudera that TGX guys spoke of, and Saihoji, the elusive moss temple, as well as the Pop Japan Gourmet Course, which includes meals every day at culinary hotspots, which is optional. I assume they'll knock some of the price off if you choose not to go that route. And, of course, they include professional bilingual tour guides, as well as a customized tour guidebook with maps, descriptions, and Japanese phrases. That's the beauty thing about going with the tour package company. They make all the arrangements, and a lot of times they help out with, you know, giving you, like the customized guidebook and that sort of thing. It's really something you should think about. They also released complete details of this really huge 10-day itinerary. You'll definitely want to go to the Pop Japan website and check that out. The link will be in our show notes. Unfortunately, they can't commit to the tour unless they have 15 guests minimum. And unfortunately, they haven't yet reached that milestone. So if you're at all interested, you'll definitely want to contact them and get on the list. So summer con season has definitely started, and all of the big three conventions that we have our eye on, Anime Expo, AM2, and FanimeCon, have come out with a flurry of new guest announcements over the past week or two. FanimeCon announced that voice actress and singer Mai Aizawa and designer Shigeto Koyama will be guests of honor. Mai Aizawa, who has been a voice actress since 2004, has played numerous roles in anime, video games, and musical productions. She's had roles in Lucky Star, Air, Clannad, Rosario Plus Vampire, and Mirai Nikki. Her most notable role was as Natsumi Murakami in Maho Sensei Negima and Mio Naganohara in Nichijou. She's done video game work, including Harvest Moon, Suikoden, Super Robot Wars, and the Yakuza series. She's also a musician and has done work on some CDs tied to the shows that she's also worked on, such as Clannad and Lucky Star. She'll be performing at FanimeCon's Music Fest, their concert series. She'll be performing her new song, Kimi ni Todoke. I have no idea whether that's related at all to the Kimi ni Todoke manga and anime. If someone knows, please tell me, because I'm curious. And Shigeto Koyama debuted as an illustrator, but then moved on to mechanical and character design work. He joined Gainax in 2004, and for even such a short career, he's got an impressive body of work. Artwork and character designs provided for Hero Man, Moribito, Guardian of the Spirit, and Guild 01, Liberation Maiden. Mechanical designs featured in Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, Solid State Society, Eureka 7, and Star Driver. Artwork and character design in Die Buster, otherwise known as Gunbuster 2, Gurren Lagann, and Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt. His most recent work was as a key animator on the Rebuild of Evangelion Tetralogy, and as a member of the design development team for Eureka 7 AO. He's also worked on video game projects in the No More Heroes franchise. AM2 also announced another guest, Hiroshi Nakahama, who is an anime director. He directed Mushishi and Detroit Metal City. He started his career at Madhouse as a mechanical designer and then did freelance work on several series, including Revolutionary Girl Utena as an animation director and Fruits Basket as an assistant director and episode director. He has since directed Mushishi and the Detroit Metal City OAV, and he also served as episode director for Guilty Crown. Now let's talk Anime Expo. Last year's Anime Expo was awesome. I mean, come on, the U.S. debut of Hatsune Miku and the Vocaloid concert? At the time, I opined that they're really going to have to try hard to beat themselves next year. Well, they are trying. I mean, we've had the announcement that Lisa, famous for her work as the singing voice of Yui in Angel Beats, as well as the band within the series Girls Dead Monster, but AX came out with yet another bombshell musical guest announcement, Yuki Kajiura and Fiction Junction. Yuki Kajiura is a music composer and songwriter and a producer. She's created music in a wide range of areas, film, animation, games, stage, and TV programs. She has a really unique sound, a unique style that fuses the essence of Europe and the Orient and attracts great support not only in Japan but worldwide as well. Her music is really, really unique. It's very kind of brooding, kind of, you know, ominous, dramatic. Even her more, you know, J-pop type work has that touch. Fiction Junction is her solo project, which she launched as a project to create and break out new performances in which Yuki Kajiura writes the songs as fiction, and has each song intersect and join with a solo vocal artist, Junction. First project was Akatsuki no Kuruma, sung by Yuka. In August 2011, Fiction Junction released Stone Cold, the opening theme of Sacred Seven, the anime, which is still one of my favorite songs. I have that still on my favorite playlists on my iPhone. Members of Fiction Junction include Kaori, Keiko, Wakana, and Yuiko Kaida. Of course, they'll be giving panels, presumably signing autographs, and will be giving a concert. They also announced another really interesting and unique musical guest, Anna Metal. Think kind of like our answer to Visual K, sort of a metal band. Think, you know, 80s metal like Kiss. This band, which is interestingly enough based in Japan, their members include singer Mike Vescara from Obsession X Loudness, bassist Rudy Sarzo from Blue Oyster Cult, X Ozzy Osbourne, Quiet Riot, Whitesnake, and Dio, guitarist Chris Impellitteri, and drummer John Detty, ex Slayer Testament. In addition, former Megadeth guitarist Marty Friedman has joined Impellitteri in arranging their tunes. Their self-titled debut album has been gold certified in Japan and has hit the number one spot on Amazon's Hard Rock Heavy Metal chart and number two on Amazon's anime chart in Japan. Their sophomore album, entitled W, is set to release in the U.S. in June. And it includes Give Lee, Rock Lee, which is the opening theme song of the Naruto spinoff, Naruto SD, Rock Lee, No Seisen, Full Power, Ninden. There's a title for you. Anime Expo also announced that Monica Rial will be a guest of honor. Now, if you've watched any dubbed anime at all, you're bound to recognize her voice. She's a very prolific voice actress. She's been in the business for over 13 years, and she's lent her voice to over 250 anime, including Bakano, Black Butler, Black Cat, Negima, Soul Eater, Witchblade, and many, many more. She's also done some work as an ADR script adapter and occasionally as a director for Funimation. She'll be participating in a meet-and-greet autograph signing and a focus panel with Jamie Marchi. They served as the voices for Patty and Stocking in Patty and Stocking with Carter Belt. For the J-Fashion aficionados, Anime Expo also announced that Doll Delight and Cyril Lumboy will be another guest of honor. She's well known in Lolita fashion throughout the world as Doll Delight. The Philippines-born Cyril developed her custom line inspired by Harajuku street fashion, drawing from a broad range of Lolita subsets. She launched Doll Design 4 years ago, creating headpieces and quickly expanded the brand to include a line of custom dresses. Now U.S.-based, she has received accolades for her progressive work that incorporates sweet, gothic, and punk aesthetics. She's also recognized for her artistry in mixing prints in her Doll Delight designs. The Gallery of Fantastic Art, or GOFA, is also going to be exhibiting at Anime Expo. They are dedicated to bringing Japanese anime, manga, and SFX to people all over the world. They promote artists, host exhibitions, and plan events worldwide to bring some of the most interesting, beautiful, and exclusive art from Japanese artists, including Takad, A. Akami, Matsumoto Izumi, Fujishima Kosuke, Murata Range, Tomekei, Okama, and many others. They're going to have a panel and autograph signing by Yuki Usagi. They'll also be showing three of their main artists, Kei Tomei, Murata Range, and Izumi Matsumoto, at Anime Expo. They'll also be selling 8 original Izumi Matsumoto works, 4 large and 4 small, probably, I'm presuming, at the charity auction. Of course, we mentioned last episode that Danny Chu will be returning. He's going to be their sort of MC. He'll be hosting the main events. He will also be a guest speaker on the Japanese fandom and culture at Project Anime, the SPJA-sponsored industry conference that takes place immediately prior to AX. Manga Gamer announced that they'll be hosting voice actress Tomoe Tamiyasu at their booth. She'll be signing autographs there. Also, the president of Overdrive will be there too, as well as artist Shinji Katakura. They'll be offering autographed Dengeki Striker art boards at their panel. Voice actress Tomoe Tamiyasu has played many visual novel voice roles. She's also played Futami Moriyama in Recorder and Rancel, and she'll be voicing Rin Natsume in the upcoming Little Busters anime. Finally, the anime Muv Love Alternative Total Eclipse will be debuting at this year's AX on the same day as it debuts in Japan, July 1st. And this is a spin-off of a 2006 visual novel. Voice actresses Minami Kuribayashi and Ayami will also be there. Koki Yoshimune, who is the original creator of the series, will also appear at their discussion event. Minami Kuribayashi, the voice actress, she performed songs for many anime series, including Carnival Phantasm, Infinite Stratos, Camphor, Katana Gatari, Medaka Box, Mobile Suit Gundam Age, Mahime, and Rumbling Hearts. The singer Ayami performed on the opening theme song Freedom for Battle Spirits Heroes as a vocalist of the musical unit Ram. Both Kuribayashi and Ayami will contribute to the Muv Love Alternative Total Eclipse anime. Of course, there are tons of other anime conventions coming up all over the world. You'll definitely want to check the links in our show notes for these and other anime convention announcements. Two more really brief announcements. Once again, I've put up another round of eBay auctions, and since we are confirmed as press for both FanimeCon and Anime Expo, we're definitely going to need every bit of income that we can muster. So check out our auctions and bid. The link is in our show notes. Only about a day or two left of the auctions, so you better hurry. Finally, if you're in the Los Angeles area, I have some very sad news to report. A really unique establishment, the Royal Tea Cafe, will be closing soon. Royal Tea is an interesting establishment. They're kind of based around the Japanese maid cafe concept. So, you know, there's you know, the people that serve you are basically, you know, in maid cosplay. But it also serves as a really cool art space as well as a store. You know, all sorts of unique exhibits go through there. Unfortunately, the owners have decided to kind of move on and do different things, which is very sad because it was really a unique establishment. It'll be sad to see them go. Definitely, you're going to want to, if you can, you're going to want to get there while you still can. They plan on staying open for their next few exhibits, which means they'll be there through at least August. But I would definitely go as soon as you possibly can. Okay, that's about it for news. But before we go on to the meat of today's episode, it's time we have to pay the bills around here, which means it's time to thank our sponsor, GoToMeeting. Trust is very important, you know, when you're dealing with coworkers, colleagues, clients, that sort of thing. We develop a sense of trust in the people that we know and that we deal with. Unfortunately, this only works, you know, for people that we actually physically deal with. In particular, it does not work when you're dealing with people somewhere else, in other towns or even other countries. And the fact is, in today's global economy, you know, we're often having to work with people in distant offices, you know, hiring consultants, you know, that come in from remote, that sort of thing. And when you're dealing with people in remote areas, and it's very hard to develop that sense of trust when you can't, you know, physically meet up with the people that you are working with. That is why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It's a simple online meeting system with group HD video. It really helps you get better connected to the people that you depend on for success. You actually get to see their faces, see their expressions. You know, us humans are very visual creatures, so we're, you know, even if we are not aware of it, we are constantly, you know, looking at the people that we're talking to and, you know, reading their expressions, and that kind of contributes to the decisions that we make. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a computer, and with one click, you're instantly collaborating with your team or clients in real time, from anywhere to anywhere. You can even participate on the go using an iPad, iPhone, or other smartphone or tablet device. Being able to see the people that you're talking to really helps build that sense of trust and confidence that we need, as you know, with the people that we're working with, and it helps make meetings more effective. Now, it's pretty obvious how this would work, you know, in a business setting once you're actually working, you know, in a job. But have you ever thought that GoToMeeting might help you actually get a job? These days, a lot of people are putting up their skills on websites such as Elance and working as sort of freelance consultants. The problem with that, though, is, you know, again, there's that sense of trust, you know. If you as a company are wanting to hire a consultant, you know, you really have to be able to sort of meet with them and face them face to, you know, meet them face to face in order to make the decision whether or not to hire them. And conversely, you know, as a consultant, you probably want to be able to see, you know, actually physically see the people that you might potentially be working with. And with GoToMeeting, this is really easy to do. Let's say you post your skills up on a website like Elance, and then some company decides they want to hire you. Well, with one click, you can send them a GoToMeeting invite. You know, it comes in their email, and literally with one click, you know, it automatically installs the software, and you are communicating with really high quality video and audio. Both sides can literally see each other eye to eye. And you can use GoToMeeting's screen sharing feature as a really unique way of presenting your portfolio, you know, your body of work to your potential employer. You know, you can show them the iPhone app that you wrote. You can show them the website that you coded up. And, you know, since you're actually talking with them face to face, you can, you know, gauge, oh, if they're interested in this one particular aspect, you can instantly focus in on that. And conversely, if you're an employer and you're trying to describe the project to hire somebody for, you can actually share your screen and, you know, show them, you know, the details about it. You can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. Listeners to this podcast can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait for the special offer. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. That's PODCAST. Our thanks to GoToMeeting for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so now on to the second part of our chat with the guys at TJX, the Japan Experience. In this part of the chat, we talk about how to travel within Japan, you know, using the trains and buses and all that, and subways and all that, as well as some of our favorite foods from Japan. Unfortunately, the audio in this part is a little bit worse. There's more of that echo that I unfortunately could not cut out, but I think it's still good enough to listen to. And, you know, the information that we provide is definitely of interest. So check it out. So without further ado, let's get on to the episode. So let's now talk about getting around in Japan and Tokyo and various other cities. So with if you're in Tokyo, you are in luck because you have access to probably the coolest mass transit system I've ever seen.
Oh, you mean the maze of hell?
Well, it is a maze, yes. But once you get a good book or hook up with someone who knows the area, you could literally get from anywhere to anywhere.
Yeah. The Tokyo subway system, when you look at it in a whole, it's scary. Let's face it. You see all these lights going everywhere. One safe point, the Yamaote line.
Yes, the green trains. This is a train line that basically hits up all the major stations in the Tokyo area. I believe it goes to Shinjuku. I'm pretty sure it goes to Akihabara. I believe it goes to Ginza. It goes to Ikebukuro. It goes to all the major stations. And so usually from the Yamanote line, you can get anywhere else, you know, by just a transfer. And the nice thing about the whole Tokyo system is, it's a single payer system. In most cases, you get this thing called a Suica card. It's this little card that has a little RFID chip in it or something. Anyways, basically you kind of slap this thing down on the turnstile and you don't have to insert it into anything. It sort of reads it through the air and it just sort of beeps you in and there's various machines that you can go to add money to it and stuff. We found it to be extremely handy.
Definitely. It's one of the best things that you can invest in if you're staying in Tokyo to travel. Beyond that, they expanded it, you know, to be able to buy things in the stations, which was just, an idiot thing to do.
Really? So it kind of acts as like a sort of ATM card as well? Or
yep,
like a debit card or something you could buy.
Yes.
Cool.
And a lot of stores in Tokyo are actually starting to be able to take payment through that as well. So you can be outside the station itself and still be able to use your Suica card to purchase, going into a Lawson's or whatever. You can, instead of whipping out your money, you can whip out the card and pay for it that way.
Well, that's neat. They didn't have that when we were there. One thing I did want to mention is the nice thing, at least about the Yamanote line, and I believe a lot of the other lines are starting to do this as well, is pretty much most, if not all, of the station signs and the train announcements are in English as well as Japanese.
Yeah, they were going that way when we were there in 2005.
And then And the other interesting thing about Japanese train stations is each station has a theme song. It's kind of weird. They sound like old 80s computer MIDI tunes, but each station has its own sort of theme song, and you can sort of get to know which station you're at, you know, just by listening as the train pulls up, the doors open.
Yeah, that's
in particular, there's the station that comes just before Ikebukuro on the Yamanote line, which has an extremely long name, which I can't remember, but that region is the traditional birthplace of Astro Boy, Tetsuwan Otomu. So their theme song is the Astro Boy theme.
Okay, that's cool. And of course, you know, besides trains, there are buses and subways and various other things all through Tokyo. I believe when we went to the Ghibli Museum, we took the some train or other to one station, and then hopped on a bus in Mitaka. So, like I said, there's some great books in English, even great books on the Tokyo Transit system. And you know, going there armed with one of those, it will certainly help.
Yeah, it's definitely a great thing to have a good book or a good map that shows you how to get around the subway system. But again, Suica is great because you can, it's cross-platform. It's the entire transportation system, not just JR, even though JR East was the company that put it out first. They've rolled it out for getting onto the subways, getting onto buses. Anything in the metro area will allow you to travel.
So now, traveling between cities, and I think the method, the most preferred method is the famous Shinkansen.
Yes, definitely Shinkansen is the otherwise, most popular.
Otherwise known as bullet trains. And there are three types, if memory serves me correctly. There's the Hikari, the Nozomi, and the Kodama, or something like that. Anyways, they yes. differ between on what speed they run at. I believe the Hikari is the one that runs the fastest.
No, it's not. It's
okay,
the middle one.
The Nozomi, sorry. Yeah, the Nozomi is the fastest, the Hikari is the middle, and the Kodama is the slowest, I think. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yes.
But that's only on the Tokaido line. Ah. If you go to other Shinkansen lines, they've got different train names.
And if you're planning on at all going using the Shinkansen, over any length of time, the JR Rail Pass is a must-buy.
Yes. I have to agree on that one.
JR Pass has to be bought before you go.
So you have to buy it before, right?
Yeah, they will not issue you one while you're in Japan. And it's only for a certain amount of time only.
So, like, you buy it for, like, you know, if you're going for 2 weeks, you buy a two-week pass, or, you know, or if you're going for 3 weeks, you buy a three-week pass, that sort of thing?
Well, from what I've been looking up over here, they only have two passes listed right now. Only one week or 2 week.
Ah. So I guess...
So if you're there longer than 3 weeks...
By a 2 week and then a 1 week.
That might be out of luck.
Yeah, all right. But basically, if I'm understanding it right, the JR Rail Pass basically lets you use any of the Shinkansens or something like that?
No, the JR Pass goes well beyond just Shinkansen. Mm. It allows you to use any JR train in Japan.
Nice.
So whether it be just a local train like Chuo-sen in Tokyo or all the way up to the Shinkansen. There is a restriction with Shinkansen, though. I don't know what the cost would be these days. But if you wanted to ride Nozomi, you had to pay an extra something like 50 or 7,500 yen to convert the ticket up to a Nozomi and let you get on. Because Nozomi is usually green car only, which means that it's assigned seating.
Reserved car, as opposed to an unreserved car that you can just anyone can
exactly.
walk on. Uh-huh.
Well, I just pulled up the information for the Japan Rail Pass. And it's up to 21 days you can go up to.
Oh, that's good. So you can get a three-week pass.
Exactly.
Sorry.
And now... I don't know how things have progressed, but when we were there in 2004, they were starting to talk about developing even faster methods of transport, right? Maglevs and that sort of thing. I don't know if those have entered active service yet, or if they're still in testing or limited testing. But you know, if you're a train junkie, that's something you might want to investigate as well.
I know a little bit about the maglev. It's been kind of like a scrap. The problem is magnets. They've been finding that these magnets keep on losing their polarity.
So
during the wintertime, they work okay. And during the hot summers, they don't work okay.
So they're still working out the technical difficulties. Just like our podcast.
it's not only that, but they were the plans were to build a completely new track connecting Tokyo to Osaka. Instead of having all of the various stops along the Tokaido line, that follows the coast. It would be going up through the mountains with only two stops, Nagoya and then Osaka. So you've got the money to build that as well. And as Ron said, it's in a perpetual state of, you know, testing. It's not being done because I went to the test facility when I was living there back in 98. And it was going to be out within a few years at that point. And we're 13 years later and it's still nowhere near to completion.
So they're working up. They've got some bugs to work out of the system.
Yes, definitely.
Now, if you're going even further, there are other trains. Like, for example, I believe if you're going to Hokkaido, which is the northernmost island, there is a night train that goes there. And if you're going to other, you know, if you're going way out there into some of the, you know, more rural areas, there are also trains that go there. The only problem with those is that they run on extremely irregular schedules. They don't run very often, and they end rather early. So if you're not careful, you could be stuck.
And not to mention that sometimes the trains can be weird.
Example was Gladiator's trip one day. Shinkansen, where the express was not as faster than the direct route. We were traveling back from Tokyo Disney, getting back to Nagoya.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, yeah. I had actually purchased a ticket on the Hikari train and then lost track of time. So I had to hit connections in Nagoya to get myself home and realized that, you know, the Hikari wouldn't get me there in time. So I had to actually upgrade to the Nozomi to get me there in time. Which was an interesting trip. My ears kept popping the entire 2 hours that I was on the train.
And yeah. One thing I wanted to mention about the trains in Tokyo, for example, is they all stop running at right around midnight. And I don't think they start up again until, what, 6 or so in the morning. So if you're out late, you either have to be sure and get done with whatever it is you're doing before midnight, or find some place to hole up for the night.
Yeah, well, the private railways and the subways may run slightly later, usually because of the work attitude that a lot of Japanese have. The trains will start running about 5 a.m., actually, at least on the major routes and major lines. So getting around is not that difficult if you're out late.
It's the trains that are another issue.
Yeah, you could always crash at a love hotel if absolutely necessary.
Yeah, actually, another trick that a friend of mine told me about is find yourself an internet cafe. I have this later in my notes, but there's these great chain of internet cafes in Tokyo called Manbu. They're open 24 hours and they have private rooms. And so a lot of college kids and salarymen do. You can hear them sort of snoring away in the private booths as they get a private room for, you know, between midnight and 6 or whenever, and they can either sleep or, you know, surf the internet or a combination of both.
Or hit your local Denny's and just crash there.
There you go, yes.
Good order coffee and fall asleep.
Yes. Now, nice segue, because next I wanted to talk about my favorite topic, food.
Food.
Now, there are certain must-try foods when you go to Japan, and unfortunately, I was not able to try some of them. The one thing that I kick myself constantly now to this day is I never managed to make it out to a Moss Burger.
Oh,
I know. Fail.
Blasphemy.
Yes,
not
fail.
Not making it to a Moss.
Fail. What is Moss Burger? It's not a burger made of moss, obviously.
No, it's just M-O-S, but pronounced Moss. And it's the Japanese take on American fast food. With a couple of really notable exceptions. One is the fabulous rice burger. They change it up every once in a while. If you're lucky enough, you'll be able to get the Nikuman burger, where they just take the barbecued pork and stuff it inside two patties made out of rice for your bun, and that's your rice burger.
And don't forget, you also get some fries
and two onions. Exactly, two onions. You can't get more. Can't get less. You just get two.
Unless, of course, you just order more onion rings on their own.
Okay. So we already talked about okonomiyaki. What other food items would you say are a must try?
Ramen. Definitely.
Yes.
Find a good ramen shop.
An interesting type of ramen shop to hit, and this would be anywhere in Japan, is a shop that has a vending machine. So it gives you pictures of all of the various ramen and udon that they have. You put your money in, you get a ticket out, and then you go sit down. You give the ticket to the waitress, and then they just bring you out your dish. One that's rather typically Japanese that is sometimes hard to find is a stand-up ramen stand, usually found really close to a train station. So those are a couple of interesting places to try.
Also, it's kind of interesting. Is the U.S.
They're taking on some of the U.S. dishes. Take for pizza. We had this one weird pizza,
which was potato and bacon.
Yes.
And the bacon wasn't really cooked. It was cooked, but it was like crispy.
It wasn't crispy over here.
And potato, like full slices of potato put on top of the pizza. No cheese, no nothing else, just that. That was different.
Yes, and that was found at a fast food place called First Kitchen.
What's the one that's served with meat and water?
Meat and water?
Yeah, we saw it on a commercial a few months.
Oh, you're thinking of Sukiya, the gyudon shops?
Yep.
Yeah. Gyudon is a rather interesting, sort of Japanese fast food that has exploded. What's the name of the... There's a really popular chain that's so popular that there's actually locations in San Diego and in New York City in the U.S. I've got a parody T-shirt.
Yoshinoya.
Yes. So Yoshinoya is the name of the chain, which is really popular. Again, it's gyudon, so it's almost shredded braised beef put over a bed of rice, which is usually very cheap but very tasty.
Oh, I have to agree with you on that one. And now there's also sticking to fast food. There's a place called, I think it's La Teria. And they have something called the teriyaki burger. This burger I fell in love with. Because nothing says a great burger
without
having a burger.
Egg, bacon, on a bun.
With teriyaki sauce.
Oh, so good.
An unusual food item, which my wife and I developed a taste for in our trips to Japan, is toast, specifically white bread toast, because the Japanese have a very thick white bread that they use for toast, and it is just delicious. We hit up Japanese groceries in the United States for the thick bread, but in particular, our first breakfast in Japan was in Ikebukuro. We went to the Cafe Momonga, and they served this thick white toast is along with the breakfast. This is delicious. And then when we made our second trip to Tokyo, we ended up in our train kit. We got there from Yokohama in the afternoon, and we headed over to Cafe Momonga. And the only thing they were serving at that time of day was a snack of toast, and it was our favorite thick Japanese toast. So I recommend if you want to go for breakfast, go to a cafe that serves thick Japanese toast.
We experienced that too. I found out what toast it was. It's called the style is called Texas.
But Japan loves it a lot.
Now, one thing that if you, especially if you're traveling by train, you might experience is the phenomenon known as eki bento or train station bento. The food on trains is generally extremely frowned upon. Food and drink on trains is extremely frowned upon on short trains, like intercity trains. But if you're going between cities, they a lot of times, you know, they have these carts that, that go down the aisle that you can buy food and drink from. But at a lot of the train stations, you know, before you get on the train, you can buy eki bento or train station bento. And as the name implies, it is a bento lunch, you know, packed and ready to go for you. And the thing is, many of the train stations have their own particular popular varieties of eki bento. And, you know, Mr. J List was talking about this on one of his recent newsletters. But yeah, a lot of the big train stations have their own particular famous combination eki bento. So if you're traveling by train, you know, definitely check that out.
Inside Kyoto itself, at Kyoto Station, there's a place called JR Shop. At the very bottom of it,
it's like a huge shopping arcade.
And everything's pre-made. We went down there. We used to grab down bento all the time.
Yep.
Shoe cream also. All types of different stuff. And it was more selection than what you had on the train. So you could go from okonomiyaki to udon to natto.
Another place, kind of style of place you might want to think about checking out is an izakaya, or a traditional Japanese drinking establishment. And at these places, they often serve food. You might be thinking, you know, coming from the West, you might be thinking, bar snacks, you know, just like a bowl of pine nuts or something. No, I mean, we're talking real food like yakitori and various other things like that. And, you know, munch on that while you drink.
Yes.
And of course,
Liger's here smiling because he knows what I'm talking about. We went to one.
Our Japanese friend dragged us to it. And she ordered a whole bunch of different stuff. We had mochi and bacon.
Oh, so good.
Yakitori.
The mochi with bacon was the weirdest thing. Because the mochi was so soft and stringy. So it kind of was like, it was different.
It was different.
Yes.
Do you remember what else we had that day?
There was some kind of yakisoba or yaki udon that was brought out that we tried. I don't remember everything that was brought out, to be honest.
I think that was the day we discovered that Kuma's flash soup, right?
My eyes kept on going.
Yes, and then we have a picture where the two other of us that were there, because there was a group of four, we, as a joke, forcibly kept the eyes opened while he took a picture.
Ow.
So you have our Japanese friend on one side, holding my eyelid open. They had my eye on the other side, holding my eye open. And they had them also with their free hands, doing peace signs. And I get blinded by flash.
No. And finally, I wanted to talk about cheap and quick food. The wonderful thing about Japan is the konbini, or convenience store, which they literally have like one on pretty much at least several on every street corner. They're often like right opposite of each other. So you got to wonder what these guys' business plans are. It's like, yeah, our competition is right across the street from us. Sure, whatever. Probably the more common ones are Lawson, Family Mart, or Famima, and 7-Eleven. But you go into one of these, and you can often find all sorts of really cheap things that you can just grab and take with you. Onigiri is basically, it's rice ball wrapped with seaweed with various things inside of it. Could be tuna, could be spicy tuna, plum, umeboshi, all sorts of different kinds of stuff. And they're really cheap. I think they typically about 120 yen if I'm or maybe even less if I'm remembering correctly. And you just, you know, grab a bunch of these. What we did is every night when right before going to our hotel, we'd grab a couple of them, stick them in our hotel's fridge, and then we'd have breakfast for the next morning. Although those things were awesome. They're something you could grab with you and easily take with you. But also, Nikuman. And its cousins, Pizzamon and various other things. Basically, they're sort of steamed dumplings with yummy stuff inside them. Nikuman is, I believe, well they have roast pork. Pizzamon is, as the name implies, it has pizza filling. I think they have curry, chicken curry. They have all sorts of different kinds, and these things. Like are extremely cheap. I think 120 yen, if not cheaper. And on a cold night, they are a godsend.
Oh yes.
One thing to keep in mind, however, because they are hot, they only run from mid autumn to mid spring, and then they're gone.
Yes.
So yeah. If you're going in the summer or late spring, early fall, you're probably going to be out of luck to try them.
Well, spring use a little bit. I mean, we were there.
Well,
and we were lucky enough.
Well, I'm saying late spring being the latter portions of April.
Okay.
No, late spring to early fall, you're out of luck. The rest of the year, you're fine.
And you have a story about that.
Are your days going to school?
Well, my days going to school, we just went into our little cafeteria to get them. No, it was traveling, you know, just going to the local Family Mart or whatever and picking up a couple of Nikuman and something to drink, and that was breakfast, you know. But a story about Nikuman was back when I was in when I was living there, I was able to go to the Nagano Olympics. And my buddies and I just broke up in the evening to explore wherever we wanted to go. And I found this Nikuman cart. And these things were absolutely humongous. Think twice the normal size of a Nikuman. And it's a little bit out of date in terms of pricing, but 120 yen per Nikuman when we could normally pick them up for 80 yen a piece, regular size. And I just, wolfed down two of those as a nice big dinner and was quite happy.
Nikuman of Doom.
Nikuman is one of my favorite things of Japan.
Like I said, we went in January. That was when the tour was, and it was cold. And every night we'd grab one, and it would feel so good.
Yeah, we used to eat them for breakfast.
Two of those and lemon water. Yeah, another warm dish that is quite good is korokke.
Yes, korokkes.
Yeah, Japanese croquettes are their take on the French croquette. Best one that we ever had was in a little butcher shop in Kyoto. And they had them pre-made but not pre-cooked. So you asked for what you wanted. They would drop it into the hot oil for you, cook it for about 90 seconds or 2 minutes, however long it took. And then they brought it out piping hot. And that was quite a treat.
And basically, those are mashed potatoes with various kinds of stuffing, meat or whatnot, breaded and fried.
Yes, that's
indeed
correct.
Good stuff. Let's see, winding down on food. Try something new. There is literally tons of great food in Japan. Yakitori, otherwise known as chicken on a stick, is another popular thing. There's entire restaurants devoted to it where they bring them out, you know, in various combinations. And they basically just kind of look around. A lot of times at restaurants, they will have plastic models of the various dishes they have, so you kind of get an idea of what they've got. And a lot of times, you know, you can just order by pointing to what you want. But, you know, don't be afraid to try something new. When we went to Japan, that was like the best food that I've ever had, I think.
Yeah. And one other recommendation that I can make in terms of restaurants is if you want something rather unique, try a family restaurant. Because quite often what you'll get in a family restaurant is a Japanese take on Italian food. Mm. So they'll have all kinds of different spaghettis with various sauces. And for whatever reason, the Japanese love Italian food and spaghetti in specific. And it can be quite the experience to see their take on it and what they do with it.
Indeed.
And let's not forget about pizza also. They have this obsession about putting corn on pizza. Don't ask me why, but corn is always on pizza.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, you know, for whatever reason, you're not really in the mood to try something new one particular time, you just want something, a known quantity. Pretty much all restaurants that have a Western counterpart, McDonald's, Carl's Jr., TGI Fridays and stuff, you can pretty much get the same stuff that you can in their Western version menu. So keep that in mind. Let's see. Final thoughts, things that, you know, a first-time traveler in Japan should know. I mentioned this before. If you're in the need for internet access, if you want to blog, you want to upload some pictures, or whatever, find yourself a manbo. It's an internet cafe. They have them literally everywhere in Tokyo. Different cities have different chains. In Kyoto, I believe their version was called Tops Cafe. Anyways, the basic premise is you can rent time on a computer. You could do it, you know, by the minute, by the hour, you know. And the rates were pretty reasonable, and as long as, you know, it takes a little bit of doing to figure out your way around the Japanese version of Windows, but we got the hang of it pretty quickly, and you can, you know, blog or upload pictures or get on Instant Messenger or send email or whatnot. It's a great way to stay in touch with the peeps back home. And like I said, a lot of these places are open 24 hours, so if you get stuck out, you know, when the trains stop running, you can go web surfing or watch anime or something, you know, until the trains run again. Any other things that you think tips that come to mind?
Yes, convenience stores or konbini, in addition to the food which you mentioned, they are a special treat for manga fans because the manga publishers put together special editions of manga specifically for certain convenience store chains. So you may find some editions of manga that you won't find anywhere else. Also, when we went in 2007, 7-Eleven, which you may not know, people may not know, is currently a Japanese-owned corporation. The Japanese liked what the Americans did with 7-Eleven and bought the chain. They had introduced ATMs that would take American ATM cards and would be available in English. So you could put your ATM card in and get some money from your American checking account in Japan in yen, which is a lot easier than going to a bank and getting some more cash in yen if you're starting to run low. And the exchange rate, as I recall, was pretty good.
Yeah, or like if you, like me, didn't get enough cash transferred to yen before you came. Now, there are, I believe, places in the airport where you can get your cash changed both to and from yen. But yeah, those I did not know about those. Those must be fairly new. Those ATMs.
Well, you also have Citibank in most of the major cities, and those have international access as well. So the same process of accessing your account back home you can do through Citibank's.
That's good to know. Now, when we went, this probably will only apply to you if you have friends in Japan that you'll be going with that you may want to be able to, you know, be able to contact in case you guys get separated or, you know, go your separate ways or something, is it might be handy to have a cell phone in Japan. And there's two approaches to doing this. You can rent a cell phone. There are kiosks at the airports where you can rent them for various time periods. And it's pretty simple. You rent them. You buy a certain amount of time on them. You can refill if you need to. And once you're done renting them, you basically drop it into, you know, it comes with a little prepaid envelope. You drop it into any post mailbox and you're all done. Your second option is you can get a prepaid phone. And they sell these at pretty much all of the convenience stores, where it's basically, it's a really cheap cell phone. I mean, it's not one of those fancy phones that you see in anime or whatever. It's probably the world's cheapest cell phone, but, you know, it does the job. It lets you make calls so you can, you know, call up your friend if you get separated or whatnot. And when we were there, we actually ended up meeting up with a guy that I hadn't seen since my school days, which was really ironic. It's like, yeah, go halfway around the world and you still find somebody from Carpinteria. But anyways, it was really nice to be able to, you know, call him and stuff, but also, you know, to call restaurants or places you want to visit, find out what their hours are and that sort of thing. And it wasn't that bad price wise. I think it cost me $100, which covered the phone and all of the time that I used on it while I was there. So that might be something you want to consider. Anything else that any of you can think of?
Yeah, not really.
I think we pretty much did a good job of covering this. So yeah, thank you all for coming on this afternoon, and we'll see you next time. Well, there you have it. Our thanks to the fine folks at TJX, as well as my co-host Danny Bearer, for their participation. Like I said before, this is probably going to be the last travel segment for a while because, you know, we're going to be launching into anime convention time, so we're going to be talking about Fanime and Anime Expo and other things. But I definitely want to do some more stuff about travel, so that'll come out later this summer. And that about does it for this episode of Otakuno Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, as always, if you have anything you'd like to say, maybe you have a comment or a question for us, please contact us. You can email us at feedback@otakunopodcast.com. We have our voice call-in line. You can leave us a message via Skype. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. There are a ton of ways to get in touch with us, and all of those can be found on the Contact Us page on the Otakuno Podcast website. Also, do remember to check out the website for our blog postings in between episodes, as well as other, you know, important announcements and stuff. And check out the various other places you can find us online. Twitter.com/otakunopodcast, Facebook.com/otakunopodcast, Tumblr.com/otakunopodcast, our YouTube channel. We're everywhere, people. So please check us out. Anyways, that's it for today. I'll see you next time.